I lived after all, despite being shot by the psychic telepathic gun.
Mwah. That's good.
Patreon, thank you. Mwah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Hey, that was a big deal. You went all the way back to the scene of the podcast crime and you excavated, you did the full Burroughs. You did the complete Burroughs.
Yeah.
They never do the full Burroughs, but you did it. You did the full Burroughs. Yeah, I found out in the background, this is a total aside, that our hometown hero, Joe Mauer, the great Joe Mauer, the greatest catcher to play the game in the modern era, made it into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. He's in.
Oh,
so that's very exciting.
That's great.
I've never been excited about a baseball player getting into the Hall of Fame. I did not realize there were so few players in the Hall of Fame. If you had to guess how many players there are.
See, I would have guessed like 500.
Yeah, it's like 320 or something like that. That's a very elite little club.
A lot of people have played the game, and the game has been being played for a long time too. Yeah.
Dude, I am not a diehard baseball fan. College football is more my thing. Mm. But there was a period of time where there was a golden age of the Minnesota Twins, and it was when Mauer was playing and Morneau was playing, and we got a good team now.
What years was that?
It's like 2005, plus, 2003. I can't remember when Mauer started, but it was just this lovely, and we were always getting to the playoffs and always getting our asses kicked by the Yankees and fine.
Okay.
But Mauer went to high school here. He was the number one pick in the draft. He played for the Twins the entire time. He never left. He could have left to go chase a championship ring, but instead he won like, I think, three batting titles. You don't win batting titles as a catcher.
It's
not done. So anyway, I just warm fuzzies. I'm a bit of a cynical guy, but I'm a little like, okay, this is nice. This is everybody's something to get excited about. And
he's still with us, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, dude. He's like our age. So
yeah, that was part of the reason I asked. But that's great.
Yeah. Oh, of course he is. Anyway, so we love Joe Mauer around here in the Twin Cities. Dude. Great. And hey, how about those fucking Detroit Lions? Your Detroit's gonna get a football fever over there.
Yeah, it's funny, I don't really follow it much personally, but they've been a bad team for a long, long time, and I tell you what, I started watching some interviews of this head coach they've got, and that guy's talk about the base department.
Like, he's a character.
He's such a character.
He looks like he walked right off the set of the WWF or whatever it is, and right on into the NFL, which is probably appropriate because.
He's a big boy. He's like 6'5". You know what I mean?
He's in the gym with the guys. I think
he's pretty young too. I mean, he's not 50 yet. So,
Well, there you go. So if Art of Darkness doesn't work out, we can do mediocre sports talk.
There you go. I had a running joke with a friend of mine, because I don't really follow sports, about like having me on and him, who knew a lot about sports. And just like, I'm constantly like, oh, do they still run around in the thing? Is that how they like just totally
getting ready for the Olympics? Here we go. I always have to thank the patrons. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We've got a nice little steady bit of growth here. We're holding on to people. We appreciate it. Brad and I have big dreams for the pod, and y'all make it possible. It's a lot of fun. You got three things for us concerning William Seward Burroughs.
Yes, sir.
And his knockout drops.
Yes. Yeah. So the first thing I want to talk about is his dalliance.
That would be a great name for an album. Knockout drops.
Yeah.
That'd be a good name for an album, dude.
Yeah.
You can have that. Patreon, you can have that as a gift.
I'm not making an album anytime soon. So go
for it. No. Yep, go for it.
Scientology. That's our first thing. 1959, Brian Geisen introduced... Man, excuse me, I drank some LaCroix. I'm bubbling quite a bit.
Mm. When I want to feel fancy, this is very well known. I put LaCroix in my humidifier.
Yes, that's right.
It really
gives you that sense.
It's just the whole room kind of.
1959, Brian Geisen and introduced Burroughs to the idea of Scientology. Years later, in the mid-1960s, Burroughs is living in London, and this dude, Graham Masterson, who's an editor of Mayfair. Mayfair was, at the time, basically, it was the UK's response to Playboy and Penthouse. It was a, lad. Yeah, yeah.
It's now, a magazine for the lads.
That's right. That's right.
I just read it for the stories.
I get it for Burroughs stories. Writing about, you know,
absolutely
shooting mescaline into his eyeball. Masterson,
put your dick away, Giles.
We're reading Mayfair.
Read the Burroughs for the love of the Queen.
This guy who is an editor at Mayfair, Graham Masterson, people might know him. He became better known later for horror novels like The Manitou and some other horror novels that were sort of takeoffs of like classic literature. Like he wrote a horror novel directly inspired by The Picture of Dorian Gray and one by Through the Looking Glass. Anyway, Masterson wants to get Burroughs on board writing a column, and Bill had always wanted this kind of a platform, you know, to spread his virus, I guess, as most writers want to do. We want more people to read our stuff. So in this first meeting he has with Masterson, Burroughs goes off on Scientology. And because London was one of the Scientology hotbeds at the time, might still be, I don't know, Masterson tasked Burroughs with writing an investigative article. The first result of this was an article called The Engram Theory. And it was the second installment in there were 21 editions of the Burroughs Academy in May. That was the name of the column, Burroughs Academy. They weren't all about Scientology, but I think two or three of them were. This first article, The Engram Theory, was the first major article on the subject of Scientology in the British press. So let me read you a little bit from this great Barry Miles biography about this enterprise. So, quote. Well, first of all, I guess, hopefully people know a little bit about Scientology. One of the core things, especially at the entry level, is the idea of an e-meter. And basically what an e-meter is it's a thing you hold, or basically like cans you hold, and they measure the galvanic response of your skin. And your heart rate and blood pressure and body temperature all have impacts, subtle impacts in the galvanic response of your skin. And it's not quite like a lie detector, but it can tell if something is physiologically going on with you, right? And so it can tell if you're having feelings of some kind, but you know, maybe it can't always say what they're about. And so
feelings.
Yeah, right.
Wait, you're telling me I could help Scientology could help me get in touch with my feelings?
I think it can make you get rid of feelings.
Oh. Hang on, so, I gotta return some videotapes.
So now you can understand the appeal.
I just want to fit in with this corporate hellscape. I got too many feelings.
It could be so much more productive if I didn't feel anything. But anyway, the idea is like, if you, they ask you some questions, and this is shown somewhat, but without so much of the e-reader component, shown somewhat in Paul Thomas Anderson's great film, The Master. And basically it's like, we'll ask you a question. And if you have a galvanic, you have a response on the e-meter, that's something that we need to talk about more. And they'll basically like hammer this subject until you no longer have a response to it. And the idea is that has cleared this thing out of your psyche, right?
Wow.
Right. So you imagine
we've just cleared William S. Burroughs out
right.
of everybody's
now I have
psyche.
no response to
no
to
emotional him. Reaction yeah. whatsoever.
Yeah. Now, this process is also called auditing, I believe. So let me read a little bit about this. Quote, Bill believed firmly in the use of the e-meter to clear unconscious blockages that are controlling the individual, so much so that he thought that Hubbard's findings and its use should be opened up to panels of scientists and specialists in biofeedback to potentiate its use. He wrote, quote, some of the techniques are highly valuable and warrant further study and experimentation. You know, I think in an early past, you have to flash back to 1959. There's this guy called L. Ron Hubbard. You don't know anything about him. He's come up with this thing called Scientology. And hey, you know, I got my e-meter read. This seems sciency. Maybe there is something to this, right?
It sure does seem sciency.
Right. Right. Exactly. Going on, Burroughs first toyed with Hubbard's ideas back in October 1859 when he wrote to Allen Ginsberg, quote, "The method of directed recall is the method of Scientology. You will recall I wrote urging you to contact local chapter and find an auditor. They do the job without hypnosis or drugs. Simply run the tape back and forth until the trauma is wiped off. It works. I have used the method, partially responsible for recent changes." A few days later, he wrote again, quote, "I have a new method of writing and do not want to publish anything that has not been inspected and processed. I cannot explain this method to you until you have necessary training. So once again, and most urgently, believe me, there is not much time. I tell you, find a Scientology auditor and have yourself a run." Now, there is, so when Burroughs, you know, he gets set off to investigate, he wasn't just investigating. He was, in terms of like trying to uncover something, he was really trying to get to the bottom of what the Scientology thing is. But he was also trying to invest in the hierarchy. He was sort of a true believer. I shouldn't even say sort of. He was a true believer for a time. He took a clearing course in 1968. That's several years later at the London Center. But in the effort to write this article, after classes, he would snoop around L. Ron Hubbard's quarters dressed as a gardener with a tape recorder, hoping to get, you know, record L. Ron Hubbard saying something in private conversation, right? So he's snooping around. He doesn't, L. Ron Hubbard is not anywhere near there.
He does
at the time.
Seem like a sneaky little bastard, doesn't he? He does he seem is. Sort of like, yeah. You sort of like, you see him kind of creeping up your bushes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking in the window.
There was a time.
What's going on.
Yeah, he did this even later in life in Lawrence, Kansas. There was a time where some young friends of his got booted out of a coffee shop or something. And so Burroughs went there and he would do his tape recorder experiments, which meant that he went there and he recorded it, like just audio recording of ambient noise. And then he would go back and he would replay the recording at just a barely audible level. And he thought that if you kind of just kept doing this, you would somehow like cause a schism in the pre-recording of the universe. And according to him, the restaurant didn't go out of business, I don't think, but like it did like experience a downturn and a period of chaos.
Well, yeah, it's because some creepy old man is like sitting there with his little right. tape recorder.
Right.
I don't need Heisenberg's uncertainty principle right, to explain right. what's going on here.
There's some Bill. Creepy old weirdo just lurking around.
Literally, not trying to be invisible, no. not trying to damp down the weird yeah. vibes, just leaning in, as they yeah. say, to his weird vibes.
Right. Right,
I'm gonna make this place weirder. I love it.
That's magic, though.
The world used to be a lot more like that, although the weirdness has gotten commodified somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. There was that period sort of between 1998 and 2008. There was this weird change that happened. And then, of course, social media pops off. Because there used to be oddballs. So you remember oddballs? Brad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love oddballs.
There used to be so many oddballs down by the university. And even when I go down there, even if they're around, like the environment now is too hostile to them.
Right, right. Like unless you're like a exhibitionist oddball.
Mm.
Right.
Right.
There's like,
right,
if I'm putting on a show of some kind, then it's okay. But it's just to be like an odd dude.
I mean, just used to be a guy that would just wander. There used to be guys that would just wander around the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were just always there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And whatever Gone. Happened to the oddballs? We don't know.
If you to be a proper country.
Yeah, that's true. If anybody knows where the oddballs went, send us a message.
Maybe, like, maybe we got to become the oddballs.
Maybe we are the oddballs. Maybe we are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Burroughs, sometime after 1968, he spent £1,500 to graduate as a level 5. He was given the clear number 1163. He believed it was very effective for him, and like apomorphine and orgone, it was one of these self-improvement cure things that he actually swore by. Eventually, he took a course to become a Scientology auditor. He was going to become an auditor, which required him to practice on people, right? But then something happens. Again, this is from the biography. quote, Burroughs got hold of copies of most of the material up to and including operating Thaden level 7 from defectors. I saw it all. It wasn't very interesting, he said. It didn't strike me as anything very special at all. What puzzled his friends was that he thought it might be. For years, he ran Scientology audits, repeating them until they ran flat on the E-meter, on one session spending 8 hours a day for 6 weeks. In April 1969, he was finally put in a condition of treason for his critical writings about the organization. Yeah, you can't do that. They tried to put me into a condition, and I said, well, I'm not going to put up with this. Gold stars and all this I left back in kindergarten, and that was that. Burroughs said. Burroughs said later.
Did he say yeah. Kindergarten?
Kindergarten, yeah.
Love it.
Burroughs said later, it was a weird episode, but interesting. I don't regret it. I learned a lot. I do know how to work a lie detector. Alan Anson, one of Burroughs' friends, suggested that one of the reasons that Burroughs became a junkie was to provide himself with the semblance of a social life, appointments, meetings, and so on. It is possible that, in part, Scientology filled the same need. People with a shared interest and endless talk about sec checks and release levels. But Scientology alienated him from his greatest love, Ian, and wasted years of Burroughs' life. Many people were turned off by his conversation, which returned time and again to Scientology. Without question, his period in London was poisoned by his obsession with Scientology. Without doubt, his life would have been utterly different, happier, more sociable, and more productive if he had never heard of the E-meter. As Burroughs said much later, there's no doubt about it. Scientology is evil and basically ill-intentioned and nasty.
So what William S. Burroughs said that.
Yes.
Not Brad Kelly.
Right. Yeah, right. I didn't have anything. I don't know much. Man, I don't know anything about this, really.
Okay, I'm reaching out to Dan Baltic preemptively.
Yeah. Well, this is why I saved it for the Patreon.
Yeah, right.
But we don't want to be a buffer.
You don't have any litigiousness on the Art of Darkness podcast. That's fascinating. I did not realize he was such a, but it kind of makes sense. I mean, he's looking for anything to kind of solve his problems. I mean,
you know, one thing we talked about this when we had Matt Pegas in the dark room talking about Burroughs. There is a thing that can happen, and I am not one of these don't do your own research people. I am certainly like dive into those fringe ideas, figure this thing out. I'm definitely firmly in that camp. But one of the side effects of doing that is sometimes you start throwing everything out and then you become vulnerable to whatever comes around because you're like, all right, it's all bullshit. Everything's bullshit. But you still have some need for something to make sense or mean something. But you've thrown everything out. Suddenly Scientology comes across. You're like, well, that seems reasonable. Like, maybe that's... Like, you can very much fall victim to whatever comes your way once you've gone down the rabbit hole.
Totally, and we're all human, and so there's a handsome guy, you know, doing an E-meter, or there's, you know, and all these, or there's a hot chick who's at the party, you know, and all these organizations know that. I mean, someone like L. Ron Hubbard,
Well,
it's time to rewatch The Master.
Yeah, and the thing, too, about any of those organizations, even cult organizations, they have some kernel of truth to them, right? Like the E-meter thing probably does kind of work in a way, at least to have a conversation, you know what I mean? And so you start with that and you're like, well, that actually does seem to work, right?
Yeah,
and
it,
so
maybe it probably their next thing works. It probably has the quality of something like confession. It's sort of a, you know, like a ritualistic thing, you know?
And so something works a little bit. And so you're like, well, maybe the next thing they do also works, you know, and it just, you know, I don't know. Now, the other thing I want to talk about is aliens.
Oh, great. Oh, good.
So now, remember, we said Burroughs at least at one point believed that everybody was in fact an agent or at least under the control of a trust of giant insects from another galaxy. Either believed this actually or metaphorically, it's often very, very difficult to tell the difference with Burroughs. Now, a little bit of history on the alien thing in American culture. In 1987, there was a watershed moment in the UFO alien discourse. This is when the writer Whitley Strieber, who is still around, he has a podcast, Dreamland. Whitley Strieber published his book Communion, in which he recounts his abduction experiences. Strieber's book Communion has the gray alien face on it. There had been other accounts of the gray alien, but it had never been thrust that much into popular culture. There was also a movie, an almost good movie, that came out based on the book with Christopher Walken playing Whitley Strieber.
It's almost good. Oh, it's so painful. Almost the almost good film.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, if he'd have done this and this and this, if they'd have done like 10 things differently, it might have been a good movie. Anyway, Burroughs read Communion, read Whitley Strieber's accounts of being abducted, and felt a concordance between the abductions Whitley Strieber discussed and his own experience with the ugly spirit. We're getting this this territory that is now called in the UFO discourse non-human intelligences, right? They can pull you up into their flying saucer, or they can visit you in your dreams, whatever. Burroughs wanted to have more direct contact like Whitley experienced, and he did try to make this happen. Okay, so in the 90s, for instance, when he was living in Kansas and when he was feeling well, he would sometimes row out to the middle of the lake near him, and he would let the boat drift, and he would say, I hear tell there's been flying saucers sighted out here on the lake, and I'm hoping maybe one will pick me up. But he made another, more direct effort. He'd noticed in all these accounts, including Whitley's, part of Whitley's abduction account, I believe, had something to do with the aliens were trying to get him to have an erection, and the aliens were trying to make him have a bigger erection. This is Whitley Strieber's account. Huh. And now, a lot of abduction accounts, whatever you think they are, some kind of collective dream, actually aliens abducting people, whatever the case, a lot of the stories have a sometimes subtle, sometimes not so subtle sexual component to the abduction. Women are, you know, raped, then have sex with aliens, whatever, right? And so Burroughs picks up on this. And this is a small little anecdote, but it's humorous and it's kind of interesting. Okay, quote, in the Barry Miles biography again, quote, as far as Burroughs was concerned, he and Strieber had likely met up with the same thing expressed in a different way. Burroughs with the ugly spirit, quote, when I go into my psyche at a certain point, I meet a very, very hostile, very strong force. It's as definite as if I'd met somebody attacking me in a bar. We usually come to a standoff, but I don't think that I'm necessarily winning or losing. In Burroughs' opinion, the aliens, if they were indeed creatures external to our own unconscious life, were abducting people in order to have sex with them. Strieber's alien, so reading down a little bit further. In order to attract the aliens to Lawrence, Burroughs let the grass on his lawn grow long and then had a patch of it cut into the shape of an erect penis, like making crop circles.
That's a strong choice. A strong choice. If your life has led you to this point.
Right.
Yeah. I like it.
This interest in aliens, they never came.
Let's get real weird on the After Dark. Let's go.
Right.
If only, dude, if you put an orgone accumulator on top of the crop circle phallus, who knows what could happen?
Gosh, I mean, I think it's inevitable at that point, right?
right. And then you have your little sprinkler comes out of the yard. Got a whole scene here. It just burrows in the back with a shotgun, just,
just waiting.
God, I love this country. Where is Whitley Strieber doing this? Where does he live? Is he like?
Oh, I don't know where Whitley. I don't know.
Somewhere like in America.
Yeah, he's an American. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. All right. Yeah. His Dreamland podcast, if you're into the UFO stuff, is pretty interesting. And he has an alternate take on what the whole alien thing is. It's kind of interesting. Here's a little thing Burroughs wrote about aliens pretty late in his life, February 3rd, 1997. He lived until August 1997. Quote, the Greys apparently are control aliens who have lost the ability to create, a dying race that needs blood and semen from humans. Bad folks, those Greys. I recall that Whitley Strieber was accused of working for the Greys. Why are abductions and contacts always to mediocre or inferior minds? Why don't they come and see me? Me is in all caps. Because they don't want to. Are afraid to contact anyone with advanced spiritual awareness. The Greys want to make people stupider. Anyone with real perception is a danger to them. A deadly danger. Okay. So the other thing I'm going to do, as I said, was I'm going to read from unpublished Burroughs material. Again, this is at the William S. Burroughs Archive at the National Public Library or the New York Public Library. I was fortunate enough through this show, wouldn't have happened any other way, the Twitter user handle at Old Man Telegram, who is a Burroughs aficionado. He's always posting interesting stuff about Burroughs and his work. He sent me scans of a bunch of stuff of unpublished Burroughs work. And so I'm going to read a little bit from a piece that I think is called the, as you know, if you've ever dealt with archival material, stuff is kind of weirdly labeled and things. I believe this is called The Old Dream Doctor. Sorry, I got to get it. It's hard. It has to be very zoomed in to read. Okay. The doctor, quote, the doctor is on stage, a gray cerebral dwarf spitting insect hate from all the cesspools of broken souls and asylums, this being apparently his natural habitat, his conception from Martin. That could be Martian, I'm not sure. Let's see the notebooks, doctor. Yes, you know what notebooks I mean, the experiments with pain waves. Yes, quite simple, really. Brain waves recorded can be tuned in with any cue, the whole fraud of madness. These people are sick because they've been attacked. Attacked by an alien enemy who then pretends to cure them in order to make them sicker. The more of these so-called psychiatrists who are allowed to practice, the more mentally ill you will have. This is the case for the old dreamer. Yes, sir, he can just wrap this one up in dreams and dream it away. I mean, this whole Freud fraud is strictly for the It Never Happened department. I disconnect all your couches and consulting rooms and asylums forever. Yes, sir, the old dreamer can see right through you and out the other side. Can you perhaps infer his tenuous dream hands by a certain difficulty in maintaining your outlines? You are dreaming to Dr. Dream and Dreamer. Over the hills and far away, little gray homunculus from Disneyland, Hollywood has fallen to the ground. Finished. The little people have left your cartoons forever. So the little gray dwarf went back to his cave in the side of the mountain. Under him, the white-hot plains and his machine that controlled the hot crab people of the plains and sent them against his enemies was broken. And rain fell on the plains, and the water rose and washed the little gray dwarf away. Yes, sir, all seven of them. Will Hollywood never learn? Yes, the dreamer just looks at the gray dwarf standing there spitting hate the way a death dwarf will, and the dwarf was saying that he was real, and the Abel was real, and the damp cold spring air was real, and the lack of money was real. Act is real, is real, is real, is real? And the dreamer just looks through and beyond him at the dust stirring on a St. Louis corner, and the hospital changed into red brick buildings reflected in a canal. Invisible soldiers draw the curtains of evening, and the little gray dwarf began to fade into the London particular, grayer and grayer, now fraying around the edges like cigarette smoke. You have forgotten your cigar, doctor. Do you still have it? The air is serious. Oh, what? He has some really bad spelling here. The smoke hangs in the air of your colorless consulting room and drifts down the corridor of that hospital. In the cold spring air poses the colorless question, and the dwarf faded into an old gray photo with a cigar there and left his other cigar there in the room unfinished. Dead smoke in the gray air, and others came and they all said they were real. But the old, oops, sorry, I thought I had the next page. Oh,
you got it.
Yeah, these are all in images, so it's not quite. So tie the little green door. So the green little gray dwarf went back to his cave and in the side. Oh, I think I already read this. Hold on.
You've been going long, Brad. Good job. You're doing all right, dude. Take your time.
Well, brain is starting to short out here.
That's all right, okay, man.
There we go. dreamed into the blue, drifting cigarette smoke in an old white room. He was losing time to retire. Little wife, white dwarf, so old and so tired, so far away. A little pinpoint of light in a distant sky, a pinpoint of white, smaller and smaller, further and further away, drifting into a white funnel of nothing. Nothing crossed the canceled sky, nothing, nothing at all. White, 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 as far as the eye can see, and I saw the brains go. Saw the gray shred and fray into white vapor trails, wiped away by a swipe of wind in the cold spring air, pose a colorless question. Fading down corridors of that hospital, leaves sift through pissoirs of present time. Dead leaves drift over the corridors of state asylums and old man homes. The hawking gray dishwater smell of institutional cooking fades out in winter mist. The white goddess drifting, she had lost the plan, drifting, drifting further and further away. She had lost the plan and the turnstiles. No, he didn't go looking for her in the hospital. He cut her lines and waited for her in the red brick courtyards and in the blue sky beyond, over the hills and far away. And the dwarf faded into the goddess, pulled into a white funnel of death in the sky and disappeared. Madison Avenue, Hollywood. Lifetime fortune, and all the bare white minds and formula of Nova, so many light years away, smaller and smaller. A swipe of wind wipes away the goddess, the little people of blue calendars and dusty roads and dead painters. And this time Ahab had learned a very old wall. White. Ooh, what does that mean?
White.
White voice, I think. Engage the dog no longer until she came looking for him. But someone took your couch far away, drained away to a pinpoint. Real, 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 real fading smell of death. Mum's suburb pissoir under the falling. He's going into hardcore cut up now. Pissoir under the falling leaves. J'aime ce type visoir of the world and the muttering, hawking white pinpoint in the sky through the worn metal subway dawns further and further. Refuse, vapor trails and hopeless minds in the depths of the white dwarf. And the dreamer saw through that hospital world a library full of the heavy knowing what has just went into the wall and disappeared, clutching gray ash and an empty sleeve, hands fading. No more is written. Henceforth, this page, white, 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 as far as the eye can see, flaps through your IBM machine, and I saw the brains go. It goes on and on like that, but I'll call it there, I think.
That's so much, dude. There's so much going on there. Yeah, he's such a heavy writer.
And it's just, it's image. I mean, he's getting to the point, it's just images. And then what, part of what happens with the cut-up, when he starts, when it's coherent and then it works into the cut-up, I think it's interesting because what he's done is he's set up this, like, this pattern of images, and then when it comes later, you feel the echo. Like, there's a moment where he says something, that's kind of right at the end, I saw the brains go. And he'd said that before in a different context. And your brain is, like, struggling to connect the two. And it makes for a, if you're really paying attention as you go, it makes for a very unusual experience. Like, you feel like you figured something out, but you haven't actually figured out anything.
Right. Yeah. And not a single cliche.
No.
Never a cliche.
No. That, you know, some of it might seem cliche, but that's because he wrote it first.
Sure.
50 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's all I've got.
Oh, that's all?
That's it. Yeah,
I'm sure people are upset that you didn't do more homework. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, Brad. I enjoyed it. That is a hell of a long day.
Yeah,
really good stuff. Patreon, remember, we got the book club coming up. If you want to participate, the details are at artofdarkpod.com.
Yep.
I'm just pulling it up right now. We
Wise
are
Blood,
going
Flannery O'Connor.
To be reading Wise Blood, Flannery O'Connor. That is coming up at the end of February. So you've got a full month, February 24th. We always love that. It'll be good to see everybody again. It's been a few months. So get your copy. Mine just came in the mail like yesterday. So I'm going to start reading that. And
good read. It's not super long. It's definitely under 200 pages. So
sweet.
Yeah.
And I will be bringing John Lennon to you in the next week or two at the most. And who are you preparing next, Fred?
Robert E. Howard.
Oh, I know.
Creator of Conan the Barbarian. Yeah, people are stoked about that.
That's going to be a good one, dude. That has it all. That's going to be... Yeah. When was he living? Mid-century?
He died in, I want to say, 1936.
Oh, so a little earlier. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, fun.
He's young. He's a young man when he died. He's 29, I think.
Oh, really? So, no shit. Yeah. Okay. Well, no more information. I want to go in. I want to go in cold and clean.
Yes, sir.
Like we do. And one more kiss for the patrons. Mwah. We appreciate you all. And try not to shoot your wife.
I'll try.